the definition of cartel. An association of manufacturers or suppliers with the purpose of maintaining prices at a high level and restricting competition. Sounds about right to me.
That definition is fitting for that.
Welcome to another episode of I'm Not Yelling, I'm Dominican podcast, hosted by Nachi and Damaris. Hey fam, it's your girl Nachi, and I'm here with
Damaris, also known as the Bronx Deepak Chopra.
That's all of that.
I mean, he used to be a doctor. Not that I am one, but
right.
I'm a doctor of me.
TV.
But I play one on TV. No, I am not a doctor. Don't come for me, please.
Right. But speaking of television, I just have a question for our listeners. Have you ever noticed the number of commercials, pharmaceutical commercials that are out there? It's almost like every other commercial is a pharmaceutical based one, where they're just peddling their meds, seeking out those who are vulnerable, who are suffering from chronic diseases or ailments, and they sort of throw out this little magic pill. You have this? I have a little magic pill for you. But just a disclaimer, there's like 100,000 side effects to watch out for, but it will
come on now.
Take care of this one symptom or two symptom or whatever disease that you have. So that's what we're going to get into today. We want to talk about the origins of allopathic medicine, how it influences medical schools, and even doctors who are prescribing these medications. I cannot tell you the number of times I've been to a physician office and there's a pharmaceutical rep either bringing lunches and treats and all of that.
Come on now.
Just so that they can get their these physicians to prescribe a particular medication. So we are going to get into all of that, and I want Damaris to go ahead and kick this off because this is going to be a real good one.
It sure is. Thank you, sister. And while I know the title speaks specifically about big pharma and we want to get into that, but I think it's really important before we just dive into how big pharma has its presence right now in our country and in our lives to really kind of lay the foundation of what was the groundwork that led up to what we know big pharma to be today. And that's why I think it's really important that we, when we start to talk about that, is to start with the story of one particular individual. And this gentleman is a very famous, successful businessman, American businessman that pretty much is a household name. Everyone knows who John D. Rockefeller is. Even if you don't know specifically what he's done, you know the name Rockefeller.
Yeah, you definitely know that.
It is an American dynasty name. And for good reason. So in 1872, John D. Rockefeller, he either shut down or was able to acquire 90% of oil companies, forming a monopoly. And by the time 1911 rolled around, the government's like, nah, kid, you're doing too much. You're violating some antitrust laws. And now we got to force your one gigantic company to break up into multiple independent countries. So they broke up his monopoly. In doing so, this is a businessman that is about control. And you see that in the types of businesses that he started and how he went about his business. Obviously, the oil, Standard Oil was an example of that. But then he started to move into other areas and other sectors. And that was part of that was turning his access to petrochemicals into pharmaceuticals. And when you think about why and how he got into it, and his approach to it was very much in addressing the threat of natural health or natural health approaches to ailments. And so he used what he had at his discretion, his resources, which were petrochemicals, right? And the fact that today, still...
And are these petrochemicals, like, derived from petroleum?
Yes, yes. That's what the petro and petrochemical stands for. Yeah. So basically all of our pharmaceuticals are comprised of petrochemicals, right? So they are broken down, and you guys could read into the science of that. I'm not getting into that. But there's so much that comes with what we're going to discuss today. I do want to hear from our listeners about what rabbit hole you eventually want me to go down, because there were so many paths, but I had to keep this, you know, 50 to 60 minutes. Okay? Right. I know attention spans are short these days. Nobody wants to hear me going on for 2 hours about, okay, I get it. But anyway, yeah. So he's like, I have petroleum. We have these petrochemicals. Yeah. Let's make some pharmaceuticals. I mean, you know, that's in a nutshell. Don't quote me on it. Right? Don't be stupid. Like I said, most pharmaceuticals come from petrochemicals, and they're a combination of like these acids and anhydrides used to make things like Novocaine and histamine, as well as sedatives, tranquilizers, decongestants, and antibacterial soaps. So all those things, that we use every day, that's over the counter as well as behind the counter, that are, you know, prescribed medication. And this I picked up directly because, you know, I like my sources, Nachi. Yes, y'all be, you know, y'all not going to catch me out there. I like my sources. Oh,
yes. You always do your research.
And that line about most pharmaceuticals come from petrochemicals comes from the National Library of Science, or I'm sorry, the National Library of Medicine, which can be found online within the National Institute of Health, which is a government agency. So the NIH, which I think it's Fauci that used to be head of the NIH, just so people could make those connections of like what agencies I'm talking about. Friend. Yeah, they're not made up. Okay. It's a real agency. So fast forward, let me just get through this. What Rockefeller does, as we've already shared with you with other industries like big food, remember the sugar industry, they hired some researchers, some doctors to fund, and they funded a study to, you know, show the health about of sugar. Well, he did something similar. Rockefeller did something similar. He, along with the Carnegie Foundation, so the Rockefeller and Carnegie Foundation, funded this study by Flexner, and it's called the Flexner Report, to study the medical school curriculum, right? Yeah, he said, study the medical schools and their curriculum. And we'll get into why. And this report, the Flexner Report, single-handedly changed the medical schools and the face of Western medicine as we know it. It swayed the government to use allopathic medicine to treat diseases. And when we say allopathic medicine, we mean things like pharmaceuticals, moving away from medicines that were used for thousands of years, herbs and other plant-derived medicines, moving away from that and labeling that as alternative and moving towards these highly addictive, high side effect drugs from the allopathic world. And that became the standard. So you understand crazy. How, right.
And what year was this?
So he, so this was after 1911, after he was found to be the antitrust. And then it was like somewhere in the early 1900s to 1920s, where like there's this report that comes out, and then his influence with the government to then have like this one, the American Medical Association, to define how all medical schools, what the curriculum should be for all medical schools. So
that is crazy.
Yes. Funded by him. Now, why? Right. This
mega rich guy.
Right. He's like, I'm bored. No, yes. He just wants more control. But this is when you have people that feel, because they have so much money, it is their, they feel entitled to now control the masses, right? If you will. So that's the history and the genesis of like the medical schools and how the curriculum was then redefined and standardized, but standardized based on allopathic medicine versus the medicine that doctors beforehand were using in getting healing properties derived from herbs and plants. And that was erased from medical textbooks through this Flexner Report, through the influence of Rockefeller.
So now where people look at it as, oh, that's just woo-woo medicine. That's not real medicine. No,
that's how people survived for thousands, for millennia. When we get into Big Pharma, I thought it was so interesting that I came across, of course, you know, this information, and it was like the word origin of pharmacy alone is interesting. Do you know the history of the origin of the word?
No. So, but tell us.
It's derived from, and I'm probably mispronouncing this, but who cares? Y'all figure it out. Derived from pharmakeia, the Greek word for sorcery. Oh, child.
let me convince you otherwise.
No, it gets better. It's not just a Greek word
let
for
me
sorcery.
Work my magic.
Right.
That's the real black magic.
Okay, and they want to be like, oh, you taking those herbs and roots. No, it's those demon names you name those pharmaceutical drugs. Probably summoning up. Let me stop. You're not summoning demons by the weird ass names of these drugs. But no, but really. But back to the origin of the word, Nachi. Come on, stay focused. It's also a healing or harmful medicine, a drug or poisonous potion. Like, those are all kinds of part of the definition. And I was like, wow, that is so fitting. Yes, it can be healing, but also harmful. Holy shit.
Yes.
I was like, facts. Okay. I'm like, I'm not making this up. Look it up. And so what's further interesting to understand why Big Pharma has so much power in our country, it is the biggest lobbying effort than any other industry. Now, for those that don't understand or are not familiar with the term lobbying, right? I first became familiar with the concept of lobbying when I was in college. I took one course with, he was a lobbyist, and so he was an adjunct professor. He taught this class. It was really fascinating. And I was like, wow, this really happens? So basically what a lobbyist will do is that they represent either an industry or a company, and they try to gain, favor with various Congress members so that they can influence and push laws that favor that industry or company, usually an industry. So companies will be part of an industry group so that they can, so that lobbying group can represent the interests of, let's say, all financial firms, which those lobbies do exist. So there's lobbies for, obviously, for pharmaceutical companies, and they're the biggest lobbying effort. So
they have deep pockets.
So they influence. So guess what? That includes that idea of paying for campaigns, donating, having these, you know, private dinner conversations with the elected politician that's supposed to, your local official supposed to represent you and your interests. Well, they're going to represent the interests of the people that actually pay for their campaigns directly and in huge sums. So not only are they doing that, obviously, within Congress and within the government, but as you already mentioned at the opening, directly with physicians. You go into a doctor's office and, like you said, you'll see a representative there.
Yes.
I mean, they're peddling drugs. I mean, they can be called a drug dealer, not in the street sense, but technically. But
technically they are. technically they are.
No disrespect to those pharmaceutical reps, but you're pushing something, right? Okay.
Yes. And they're pushing it hard.
And not only that, Nachi, they also they fund some of the medical school training programs. So I almost feel like they're almost training their staff as well outside. That's like third party staff, these doctors. And so as I've mentioned before, previous episodes, always follow the money. Am I right, sister?
Yes. When you follow the money, you'll find out
you'll get your answer.
What their real purpose is.
You'll get your answer.
What's the underlining reason behind it all?
That's it. And so another interesting fact that I came across was that I'm actually going to position this as a question. How many U.S. adults do you think currently take prescribed medication?
Hey there, INY Tribe. We hope you're enjoying this episode so far. We want to take a quick moment to ask for your support. Creating and producing this podcast takes a lot of time, effort, and resources. We love bringing you valuable content, but can only do it with your help. If you find value in what we do and would like to support us, there are a few ways you can help. Spread the word. Share this episode with your friends, family, and colleagues. Word of mouth is a powerful way to help us reach a wider audience. Leave a 5-star rating and a review on platforms like Apple Podcasts or Spotify, which can really help boost our visibility and attract new listeners. Or donate by clicking the link in our show notes to buy us a coffee. Your contributions will go directly towards improving the quality of our episodes and bringing you even more amazing content. We appreciate every single one of you who listens to, engages with, and supports our podcast. Thank you for being a part of our community and helping us grow. Now let's get back to the episode and continue the conversation. Stay tuned for more exciting content coming your way.
I'm going to say 1 out of 3 adults.
Okay, so you're saying, medication. So you're saying 33%, a third.
Yeah.
Well, it's actually 66.
Oh.
66% of all U.S. adults take prescribed medication. Let that sink in. We're going to leave a pause. You know where I found that? Because for resources, because I'm also going to put all the links in the notes. Georgetown.edu. Mm-hmm. In an article.
66%.
Yep.
But if you, like, going back to what I said, if you look at all this commercial, so if you think about it, a person is watching their television show on cable TV and they see this commercial of someone managing whatever chronic disease that they have, or they're trying to lose weight or whatever the case may be. And they're like, we got this drug for you. Speak to your doctor on your next visit. And literally these people will go to their physicians and say, hey, can you put me on this? Because I'm trying to, you know, I heard that this is really good. And where they heard that from is through the commercial, right? So it's just like they're brainwashing you. Because literally, that's what it is. I mean, you think about even like when you think about how they, the type of commercials that they show children when they're younger, you know, with the toys and everything, they get them enticed. It's enticing enough for them to say, oh, I want this. I need to get this because look how happy that person is. Look how they're living their life, because it's always, you know, somebody frolicking.
Oh, yeah, living their best life.
Yes.
Meanwhile, they like side effects, diarrhea. What? Yeah. I'm sorry, what?
Or some other fatal shit, like you may have a heart attack. Yeah. Like, what?
They're like, rare and fatal, but you might get a brain hemorrhage. What? I'm sorry. What are you talking about?
Yeah.
So that stat is crazy to me personally.
It is crazy,
and it's scary because
that's more than half of adults in this country that's on a prescribed medication.
And I think what gets lost is that when you look up a definition, they'll say, like, you know, pharmaceuticals are either will cure meant to cure disease or to treat symptoms, and, you know, and all this stuff. And I just find, more often than not, they're addressing symptoms versus actually curing anything. And
yes,
that to me is a problem, but it also makes sense from a business standpoint. right? The idea of they're here to maintain your disease. And I know for some people that may sound very cynical of me, but I've just seen my mother be a victim to a doctor prescribing her medication to be preventative, which actually ended up making her extremely sick. Like, I just, it's just not a thing. I just trust in our bodies so much more.
And the fact that she was dealing with, and this is the other thing, she was dealing with all these side effects from that medication that none of the other doctors that ended up seeing her, and including her primary care physician, ever looked to the medication as being the problem.
Never took the time.
They kept giving her the runaround and saying, I don't know what it is. I don't know what it is.
But meanwhile, if they just went to drugs.com and looked up the side effects of that particular medication, it said it literally spelled out exactly what she was going through. And we had to go to our naturopathic family doctor to discover that, oh, wow, it's this high blood pressure medication that's causing her problems. And so while there is also this sense of over-medicalization, right? This disease-mongering kind of thing that I feel that happens with pharmaceuticals. Because growing up, we didn't see any pharmaceutical commercials. And I mean, we're not ancient, but yes, we're older. But we ain't ancient like that. And then now in the last 20 years, it's like the only commercials I see are pharmaceutical commercials or Wingstop commercials. And it's like, no disrespect to Wingstop, but I'm just saying, like, those are the two things. And it's like, wait, what is happening here?
Yes.
And so for me,
that's no lie.
There's a level of, you're pushing all these medicines and you're fear mongering. And you're like, oh, you should worry now about shingles and all this stuff. Like, wait, what the fuck are you talking about? Let me talk about this with my doctor. And why are you telling me I need to now tell my doctor this is what he or she should prescribe to me? What? And so, but I get it, right? Because if you want to just step out of the emotion, this is about making profits and understanding that. And this is why, you know, when we think about the most recent medical crisis this country has gone through, and I won't name it because people become unhinged when you talk about it, but we were developing vaccines and doing all these things, these new medications to address this disease. And it's like, you're going to tell me that in 4 months, less than 6 months, you're able to now come up with a vaccine that the whole world is suffering from, and it's been fully vetted and all this good stuff. Look, I don't care about people taking a vaccine or not taking a vaccine. And to me, it's not an anti-vax issue. It is an issue of medical freedom. That's it, point blank. And this is not even getting political. Again, I need people to get out of their feelings about things and just looking at things as they are. You cannot tell me one breath that it is my body, and then in the next breath, it is not my body when it comes to some medical, certain medicines that you want me to take. Like, it's just not, that's just not a thing for me. I move the same in integrity always.
No, that's right.
So if I say that this is how I want myself to be treated, then that's what I want for everyone else. What fits the narrative. And I bring up vaccines in particular because there's one in particular that I think is kind of crazy. It's the Gardasil one, which is an HPV, supposedly prevents HPV. And a few years ago, the Baltimore Sun came out with an article about how Gardasil has been shown to not be safe nor effective. 3 countries have banned it. Japan, India, I forget the other one. You know what? Let me look at it right now. I have the article.
That's funny. I had this nurse that I used to work with. She literally told me, she said, don't ever give that to your kids. She's like, don't. She warned me.
Oh, India, France, and Japan. That this HPV vaccine has been shown to be ineffective nor safe. Baltimore Sun article. But do you understand that it's still allowed in the USA? This is still allowed in the US of A. And there are doctors and pediatricians that are pushing that on their parents for their kids. Yeah. Again, if you want to look, we grew up, we were vaccinated. I mean, but we had like 12 vaccines. We don't have like 75 as they do now. Right, and the whole point is, if you just step back and understand why the push for all of these vaccines, I mean, these are just money makers. This is like one of the biggest money makers for pharmaceutical companies are vaccines, period, point blank. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So however you feel about them, pro, anti, I don't give a fuck. I'm just telling you, that's where they make a lot of their money. And they're not always necessarily safe and effective.
But it's going back to what you said. It's having that medical freedom. And for you to make an informed decision, you have to be knowledgeable.
That's it. Of yes.
The information that's given to you. Don't go at face value because you saw a commercial or that your physician said, oh, this is what's going on. Let me just write you a quick script. And you don't ask questions. You don't look into it. You don't, again, really become knowledgeable of what you're about to take on a daily basis that can change how your body operates. And that can cause certain side effects. You know, you have to understand all of that and still have that freedom to make that choice. It is your choice. You know, that's kind of going with this. It's ultimately your choice.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
When it comes to this, you know, taking any type of medication.
Because I'm not anti-vax. I'm anti you telling me what medicine I should take.
I know, right?
That's it. Like, I don't care. Right. You want 500 boosters, rock out. I do not care. What I do care is when you try to impose what you want to do to me. Because here's the thing. Nachi can tell you, all of my family can tell you, I've been about my immune system way before any global medical crisis. Let's be very clear about that.
Right.
So what I don't need is anyone telling me how I should handle my body. Any entity outside of Damaris, the Bronx Deepak Chopra, telling me what I should do with my body when I know exactly what needs to happen with my body.
Right, right. You know best.
I do. The idea that anyone outside of me knows better about my body than me, maybe that works for a lot of other people, but I am highly, highly attuned to my body. Mm-hmm. I know when something's off. I know when something's not right.
Right.
I don't need anybody to tell me when that's happening.
Right.
And I don't need anybody to tell me how to take care of it because I've been doing it for, I'm not going to say how many years.
For many years.
Look, the bottom line is that you being in good health is not in the interest of the pharmaceutical companies. I mean, like, that's just real talk. It is not in their best interest. They are a publicly traded company that are beholden to shareholders. Thereby, they're beholden to the bottom line.
Right.
They are here to make money. They are not a not-for-profit company. They are a for-profit company. So they make money when you don't do well and you continue to buy their medication. A lot of people in general, not just in this country, suffer from cognitive dissonance. And they're like, but they say they are good. okay, you understand how they make money, right?
Right.
Like, they're not driven by altruistic reasons. Like,
right.
Wake up.
Yes, it's not meant for you to stop using it.
No. And I'm glad you say that, Nachi, because I don't want people like, oh my goodness, Damaris and Nachi are such radicals. Like, they don't want saying no to drugs. I mean, yeah, you should be saying no to drugs, but there's a time and a place for medication. I'm here for it. Yeah, it's great. Yeah. But I personally am not here to live by that medication and to use it as in some form as for sustainability. Like that doesn't work for my body. Right. My body naturally is inhospitable to foreign agents. So viruses do not thrive in me. Mm-hmm. No, illness does not thrive.
They die before they even reach me.
because I've trained my immune system. That's something that I will share with our listeners in the future of what we do. But yeah, no, they don't. And I mean, and real talk, pharmaceuticals are the largest legal drug cartel.
Yep.
And people may be like, Damaris, that's harsh. They're not a cartel. I know you guys are like,
you have what's these this big families.
I know people are like, what is this voice that she makes? That's the voice that I hear in my head. But Damaris, let me read to you, Nachi, the definition of cartel. An association of manufacturers or suppliers with the purpose of maintaining prices at a high level and restricting competition. Sounds about right to me. Yeah, no. Cartel.
There's no lie to there.
Yeah, cartel.
That definition is fitting for them.
Yes, which leads us to the partner of said cartel. Who do you think that partner is, Nachi? The FDA. The Food and Drug Administration of the United States of America, y'all. It's kind of funny how, like, FDA is responsible for not just drugs, but food.
Food. And that's the other... the other component, too.
Guys, you need to listen to our Big Food episodes. It all makes sense. But they are responsible for the approving and licensing of drugs in the good old US of A. Another three-letter agency that's like another four-letter word. So it's interesting because I came across these fantastic infographics of the process in which the FDA approves said drugs, which I'm going to link to. Because it's like, it's actually amazing to look at. And when you see the steps, it's kind of nuts. So there's a series of steps that the pharmaceutical company goes through in terms of actually getting drug/vaccine approved through the FDA. And it starts off with animal studies and then ultimately into clinical trials in humans. The animal studies come up first, but ultimately the clinical trials is what helps determine if something is safe and effective, and to also ensure that it does what it claims to do. And there's a health benefit to it. So as I mentioned already, the testing first happens in laboratories on animals, and then ultimately they put it out to humans in clinical trials. Now, the clinical trial can take years to complete. But then, which was weird because the FDA, this is on the FDA infographic and on the site, it says, however, once research has shown that the drug is safe and useful, the FDA typically reviews and either approves or denies an application for a new drug within 6 months. But if a clinical trial takes years to complete.
Right.
And
how do they turn around and approve it?
How do they determine it, if it's safe and effective, if it's only been tested on animals and in the lab first, and the clinical trials are like a series of years. It's like it starts with 100 people, then like some 500, then 1,000 people. But they say that they can essentially approve or deny an application within 6 months. Again, to me, it's like the cognitive dissonance of like accepting this at face value and not understanding how, real talk, this last medical crisis, understand you're in a clinical trial. Let me get this infographic up because I think you need to understand that, Jean. Yeah. So Nachi, the first phase of a clinical trial includes 20 to 80 healthy volunteers. This phase one emphasizes safety. Then the second phase is 100. And then the phase three is in the thousands. Y'all in the clinical trial. Good luck with that. Stop. No, I'm just saying. This is no disrespect to anybody who was part of the clinical trial that occurred in 2021 to present day.
Right.
I'm just saying that understand when the FDA is explicitly laying out exactly their process, understand the operation, what was it called? Warp speed. That operation to come up with a vaccine for said illness was 4 months. It was like from August to like December. And it's like, oh, we got something, guys. We're going to roll it out in January. Wait, right, what?
Right.
What are the clinical trials? And so, again, it's medical freedom. Like, if you wanted to be a part of it, that's all good. Like, I don't care. My point is just to share with you about that. The interesting thing, you know, I've always wondered about, well, why isn't it that, because you and I, since we go to a naturopathic family doctor, you know, we take in a lot of natural supplements. And I always wondered, well, why don't they do these studies that are done for the FDA that provides these approvals, because there are clinical trials and studies that are provided to them by said pharmaceutical companies? Why don't they get the same things for supplements? Because supplements, you always see the label that, oh, it's not FDA approved, right, whatever, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I learned it's because you can't patent natural elements, which is kind of beautiful, right? So nobody can say, oh, this healing property of plant X, I'm going to patent it. No. What they end up, what pharmaceutical companies do, because a lot of the underlying compounds and makeup of these pharmaceutical drugs is that they were based off of the healing properties of plants. So what they do is they create synthetic versions of these properties. And that's how they make the money, because they can patent that. And so they run there. They're willing to pay for the research to do this because they know they can make more money in the end, because they can patent this drug and make billions of dollars. So I found that all interesting. And so people should be thinking about that when it comes to, okay, well, there's likely some natural plant or herb derivative, something, some property that can probably help usually your ailment, because that is the underlying.
Right. Because they're pulling.
Right. What that was created for, that pharmaceutical drug.
Yeah.
But what's also further interesting is this idea of what they call a revolving door with FDA employees and pharmaceutical companies. And I've mentioned this before about, literally, you have people in the public sector working for the FDA, reviewing drugs, and then moving into
being part of the board.
Yes, being working for a pharmaceutical company, right? And not to say that there's anything inherently wrong with that, but again, put your thinking cap on. Let's think critically. For example, Dr. Scott Gottlieb, he was commissioner for the FDA 2017 to 2019. And then he moved to serve on the board of Pfizer 2020. It was a big event that happened in 2020, right, Nachi?
Yes.
Okay.
A big one.
And Pfizer was part of something even bigger in 2021, right? Yes. Delivering something.
Yes.
Anywho.
Very big.
Not saying that that was planned before people were like, oh my God, you were a conspiracy theorist. No, I'm just saying that the whole idea of, you literally was commissioned for FDA. Now you're on a board for a company that's spearheading this one particular vaccine that will wholesale bring them in billions upon billions of dollars. So your level of connections at the FDA is going to be invaluable, right? I mean, you're going to tell me that you did not talk to your old colleagues in FDA? I'm not saying anything nefarious or illegal happened. No, the point is that there is nothing right now that's stopping people from doing that. And you just have to naturally think, like, in somewhere in the back of your mind, that could it be your career goal that you somehow work on the other side of the table? And if you felt that way while you were working on the public side, like the FDA, did that change how you chose to regulate What came across your desk?
Right. Yeah.
Does that influence? I don't know. But those are things and questions we should be asking ourselves and be considering.
We should always be we should always be questioning. It's okay to question. I think
people are afraid because they were hammered in 2021 and 2022. How dare you question the authority? What? Who's the authority? The government and Big Pharma, you telling me what I need to do? I can't think for myself? Right. Not going to happen. Right. Not on my watch. See, I have to calm down.
Calm down.
Not on my watch. Not on my watch. Mm-hmm. For me, you, to our listeners, to anyone, respectfully, I want you to do whatever it is that you feel comfortable doing. This is not, what we're sharing today is not by any means intended to sway you to not take medication or to take medication. I frankly don't care. I care that you do what is right for you. That is what I care about. What you end up doing, it is not for me to have. I don't have skin in the game on that. But I certainly have skin in the game for myself and for my family. So I'm going to share and I'm going to try to influence as much as possible one way or another. But for me, I am anti you telling me what I should do with me.
Absolutely.
And y'all should all be anti anyone else telling you what to do with you. To me, that's a no-brainer.
Right.
When the government says jump, I pack more things in my bug out bag. I already told y'all. I'm not asking how high.
What they're trying to do here. I need to figure this out.
The minute they we want you to take this. Wait, what? Okay. Actually, negative. So I'm excited to share. Like, this is what we shared tonight. It's really 1,000-foot view, right? It's so high level. Barely scratch the surface. But these are all things that I'm hoping people can just sit with and understand the lay of the land when it comes to these private companies that are publicly traded but are not government entities and their engagement with government agencies. Connect the dots. Understand where money flows. Yes, some of these medicines actually do good for people, and especially with rare diseases and stuff. But I don't take that away from pharmaceutical companies. But by and large, that's not where they're making the bulk of their money. And also, you have to think, if you don't take your own health into your own hands and take care of the vessel that the Creator has given you, then you are putting that power in someone else's hands. And I'm saying, think about that.
Yeah. And it's a combination of things. It's just what you said. You have to take control of your own health. And it's not just taking supplements, because you can't take supplements. That it does not take the place of everything else that you need to do, like eating the right foods, moving, exercise, you know, doing those things. It's a combination of all those things that's going to help you take care of yourself. So you have to look at that and how that plays in your life, and looking at, okay, I'm being prescribed this, and I'm, from a personal experience, when I had surgery, I had a hysterectomy several years ago, and my physician prescribed this hormone replacement. And I asked him, I said, well, how long am I supposed to take this? He said forever. That didn't sit well with me.
Fuck out of here.
Forever.
Forever.
Why would I take this forever? That made no sense to me. And I'm not going to lie. I did it for a little bit because I was like, well, let me just take it, because until I figure out what to do and understand what my body actually needs, because I don't think I should be using this medication for the rest of my life. And the whole, number one, I probably shouldn't have had the surgery, but that's a whole other topic and conversation.
No, like when talking about this topic, there's like the whole medical industry that is separate from this, that requires its own multi episode, but yet, and yes, that's part of it. Always, yes, wanting to take your fucking organs.
Yes. Yes.
Quick to take somebody's organs.
Very quick. Very quick. And if you're not knowledgeable, and again, I wasn't knowledgeable in that sense of, okay, well, I had trust in my physician and I knew I wasn't planning to have any more kids, but I didn't understand the effects of
the impact
that having my uterus removed, how that was going to impact me. Had I known and had I done the research and found an alternative method of taking care of my uterus, I don't think I would have needed to have that surgery. But I did because I trusted my physician.
Right.
And okay, I'll do this because I want to be here,
right,
for my kids, right? Because that's how they get you. They put this fear in you. They use your,
it could turn into XYZ. It could become fatal, and then you're like, oh, okay, well, I got to do something.
Well, I don't want that. I want to be here for my children,
obviously.
But and was it when we were in Florida a couple of years ago? And I had this extreme stomach pain. I don't know what was going on, but it was just so bad that I couldn't even get up.
Yeah.
And this was during the pandemic. And I was with Damaris. I was like, Damaris, don't let me go to the hospital by myself.
No, that was without saying.
Damaris met me there.
I know. They wouldn't let me ride the ambulance with you.
Yes, but they let you come to the back, which was surprising at that time. Yeah. Then, and this lady, no lie, she was like, oh, we don't have a sonogram, but if this pain continues on tomorrow morning, we could just remove your gallbladder. What?
No, it what is something sinister.
Like, you are tripping.
Why are y'all obsessed with somebody's organs?
But the extreme pain that I was in, and if my sister was there, I didn't want that, but my sister was there as well. And she knew I didn't want that. But if I didn't have someone, I could see someone in extreme pain being like, you know what?
Yes, do what you take gotta it out. Do what you gotta
take
do.
Take it out. Take it out. I don't care. And if you remove your gallbladder, there's,
it
impacts you severely.
Yes. You and they make it seem like it's a light. It's just like, oh, it's just an extraction of this one organ that doesn't really do a lot for you. No. Everything, your body is a miracle. It is a system that, it is a well-oiled machine. Everything has a purpose. Yes. Do not believe the hype. Do not fall for the banana in the tailpipe and think for one second that, oh, one organ, as small as it may be, is inconsequential. It is very consequential.
Right. But I sidetracked a bit, but
it was a good story.
Going back to the medication, the prescription that I was given. Yes, because we'll go off on a tangent, and
I mean, this is why I said we could do so many episodes on so many branches of this one topic, but
the whole idea of, he just said, no, you'll have to take this for the rest of your life, didn't sit well. Just for you all to know, I don't take that medication. I took it for like a year, and then I decided I ain't taking this shit anymore.
Praise God.
This is not worth it. I could do other things, and I have. I'm not using that because I'm not taking something that it doesn't make any sense to me. It makes no sense to me because you're saying because I'm going to be going through menopause, like I'm going to be literally thrust into menopause. And so here is this medication to help you with the symptoms of menopause. Okay. If I naturally went through menopause, I wouldn't be taking this medication. So why are you having me take this?
Yeah.
I'll figure it out.
Yeah. Yes. And praise God you have. And you are good. And so this is what we want to leave our listeners with, is ultimately food for thought. The idea of, we share this information with you guys for awareness. This is not to make you scared or to trigger you to make one decision or another. Everyone's situation is unique and different, and you need to consider that for yourself. We share our stories because this is why we think what we think, and we know we're not alone in what we've gone through. So if this resonates with you, fantastic. If it doesn't, fantastic.
Right. Whatever works with you. You know, rock on.
We'll be okay, and you will be okay too. But yeah. Know that we love you no matter what you decide to do, whether you're in the clinical trial or not.
Stop it. Your mother's in the clinical trial.
No, but we love you guys. And we know that this can be a controversial topic for a lot of people. And, you know, people can feel strongly one way or another and get unhinged. We're not unhinged. And if you get unhinged by what you're hearing, then you should reflect on why you're so triggered. So ultimately, we want to close out as we always do. There's a lot of noise out there, but our message is consistent. Stop getting distracted by the smoke and mirrors. Tune out the noise and focus on your divine purpose in life. Vibrate higher to elevate your frequency. And always, thank you for listening.
So, that said, don't forget to subscribe to our channel and follow us on Instagram, TikTok, and Twitter at @I'mNotYelling_. And we look forward to talking next time. Bye.